Are you making a creative for yourself as a brand, or are you making a creative for your consumers? Oftentimes, brands, they're very sacred, right? It is their baby. You know, they put all this time into making something that is great, and they're trying to protect their baby. There's a point where you kind of have to let your baby walk.
It really boils down to like letting data be the decision maker. Understand what your goals are. It's going to be performance. So you kind of have to give into that a little bit. If you're looking for, you know, a very branded, beautiful experience, paid media is not going to be what works for you. But data is going to show you that the unbranded mixed content approach is performing better for your account versus just going all the way to one end of the spectrum that is so heavily weighted on the branded piece.
In marketing, content is everything, but keeping up with the never-ending demand for UGC photos and videos, along with generating product reviews at scale, can be brutal. Koli solves this problem with their content generation platform. Koli is like a content fairy godmother, providing stunning photos, videos, and reviews that help turn your potential customers into happy ones. Bid farewell to exorbitant production costs and embrace the magic of Koli's solutions. World-renowned brands like Samsonite and Bonobos trust Koli's cutting-edge software and outrageously skilled customer success team to create the marketing assets they need. Transform your content game by visiting koli.com/podcast. It's all killer, no filler. I'm Eric. This is the D2C Podcast. And today we have a panel of geniuses here, including Jocelyn, who's making a very quick return to the podcast after setting a very good number of listens with her last appearance, as well as long-standing G, Alex, who's been on podcast for a couple years now. But it's great to have you back as well. And Cam, also of the marketing team at Pilot House. Jocelyn and Alex, you guys are running the show on the creative side. You brought up this concept that I wanted to explore called the creative death spiral. Jocelyn, what is the creative death spiral?
So it's basically a concept that I came up with for our internal team of this lack of communication and performance and creatives. I define it as a creative death loop because there's three different points to it. And if you can identify them early on, you can usually like tackle the problem head on. And usually these three pillars are a huge factor when it comes to performance and your return on investment when it comes to paid ads.
How do you know that you're in a creative death spiral? Is it just basically you're not able to get traction with your ads on Meta?
Bad performance. You're not getting your money's worth. You're you know, tirelessly in account. Something's not working. And usually the creative death spiral is what activates that performance not working, you're not getting your return on investment. And so if you stay in the loop, you kind of plummet down and it's harder to get out of that poor performance in your account.
I also think it's an indicator of the relationship that you have with the client or just like brand to agency in our case. And I think creative is like the hardest thing to communicate because it's such a subjective topic. I believe we should be doing X. I can't really communicate what's good or bad about X, but we ended up doing Y. How do we get closer to X? And I think navigating that conversation is like one of the most common things that occurs in like the, you know, the agency world, and being able to really effectively communicate what your goals are creatively and how does that impact the creative decisions you're making, like impacts this spiral. And if you don't do that well, I think it's really hard to get out of this spiral that Jocelyn's talking about, and it can impact the relationship.
Well, let's dive in. A spiral is a 3D loop. So whether you're calling it a spiral or a loop, what are the three nodes on the death loop?
So I broke it down into three different sections: performance, creatives, and feedback. So usually it starts with performance. So performance is bad, usually because creatives are failing. And our creatives are failing usually because the creative feedback is failing, not necessarily that we're communicating, you know, the creatives that are working well, but it's also a lack of not communicating the creatives that aren't working well. And then you kind of hit this thing. So bad performance, bad creatives, bad feedback, bad performance, bad creatives, bad feedback. You know, the goal is to kind of identify these early on so you can like stop immediately.
And I guess feedback is like also like the quality of the feedback, but it's also potentially, I imagine, a brand's hesitancy to flow towards what might be working on the front end because of brand considerations. Is that often a part of the creative death spiral in the agency environment?
Yeah, this is a pretty common conversation that we have with brands. Usually the creatives that perform well aren't necessarily the big branded creatives, right? Alex has a lot of experience with that when it comes to, you know, the clients he's worked with, but biggest thing is the brands really want us to run these really big branded creatives. that don't necessarily perform. So it's having that conversation of saying, hey, can we do a different style of creatives that are in your umbrella of brand so that we can increase your performance? It's that conversation of push and pull of branded creatives.
I also think it's worth acknowledging, like, brands, if, like, if you own a brand, if you're an operator, like, holy shit, I give you credit, because handing a brand over to an agency is friggin' hard. Like, it's, that sucks. That's a tough thing to do. And I think as an agency, like, we feel a lot of responsibility to take care of your baby and like do right by you creatively. And that's like a big leap of faith that you have to take. So, like, worth acknowledging.
And Alex, I know you're an artist at heart and you're working at this company that is so focused on iteration and performance. How do you see this death spiral?
I mean, it boils down to the million-dollar question that we always ask clients. Are you willing to sacrifice performance for a brand, right? That's the million-dollar question. And a lot of time clients will say no. They're coming to us, a paid, you know, media agency, because our goal is to unlock performance. But at the same time, they say that and they still want to kind of chokehold the entire brand process. So I think how we kind of navigate that, and the best way I've been able to navigate that, is through a lot of education. People are coming to us because, you know, either they don't have the resources to create ads or the lack of know-how. A lot of the internal teams are brand marketers. So that comes with a lot of organic marketing, you know, design, et cetera. But the paid media spaces can be complex, especially when you think about, like, the velocity of which Meta requires you to create ads, the type of ads, right? I always say that Meta is a beast of its own and it likes to feed on what it likes to feed on, right? So there's just certain kind of creatives that are going to do well on Meta. And you kind of have to take your brand bias out of that. The other piece that I always say is creating ads that are for consumers and not marketers, because the brand teams always want to create ads that they feel great about, right? Even ourselves, we feel like we have a responsibility to create an ad for a client that feels very branded and polished because we feel good about it. But how's the consumer going to feel about it, right? And then what Jocelyn's talking about with this death loop is the feedback is really bad too, because you're so fixated on pixel pushing. Where's the logo placed? How's the copy used? They don't really understand why you chose this particular style or angle. And so it just creates this really bad feedback loop. So part of it is educating them, bringing the clients into kind of our space, our ad philosophy. And I always find that that alleviates a lot of the pressure on the brand performance conversation, because now they start to get it and they'll start to see that translate in the performance too.
I don't want to shift the buck to partnerships, because we don't have anyone here to talk about it, but is it something also during onboarding? Like, I imagine there is some expectation set during onboarding about the kind of agency Pilot House is, for instance, and the nature of velocity. But I bet when they get into the trenches, the reality of it is something that they bristle against occasionally.
Let me add to that, because I think you guys have done a really good job with this too. Part of it too is assessing them as a partner and, like, where do they land? We've talked about this, like, creative range spectrum, whatever you want to call it. You guys both have done a really good job with kind of, like, identifying where our partners land on that spectrum. And that, I think, is an equal part of the conversation. So I'd be curious how you guys do that.
This is an ongoing conversation. So, you know, when we do onboard a client, it's definitely something that we talk about. But again, it's like, they don't really understand it until they're in the thick of it. Like, they're like, oh my goodness, we start sending them creatives and they're like, well, why these creatives? Like, why not these creatives we were running before? It's like, well, those don't work. And this is why. So again, what Alex said, it's a big educational piece, but also there's always shifting goals, right? Meta shifts, the goals of the company shift, the team of the company shifts. And so we're always having these conversations of realigning back to what our overall goal is and, you know, getting creatives aligned with that as well.
I imagine part of it is just focusing on how, like, ephemeral these things are. Like, we see it from this high perspective. You know, we work with all these different clients. We see the amount of ads that get produced. And so we just have this, like, galaxy brain when it comes to just testing what works. But yeah, I'm sure a lot of it is just that education piece about, like, letting go and giving into iteration in a way.
Yeah. And a great question that I like to give to brands is, are you making a creative for yourself as a brand, or are you making a creative for your consumers? Because oftentimes brands, they're very sacred, right? It is their baby. You know, they put all this time into making something that is great and they're trying to protect their baby, especially as an agency coming in. And there's a point where you kind of have to let your baby walk. and, you know, give it the freedom and let them walk a road to live a life. And that's kind of true for consumers that take that brand and make it their own. And those performance signals is what's telling us this, right? It's like, okay, you had a vision of this of your brand, but you know what? The consumers see it this way. So maybe let's lean into that because people are liking it this way. So it's listening to your consumers and those signals and, you know, push and pull of your protecting your brand, but also listening to those performance data points that are telling you how people are enjoying your product. And it might be not what you initially created it for.
Yeah. And that's a really good segue into talking about like creative range too. It really boils down to like letting data be the decision maker. And, you know, the same way the goals are always changing. If you're a brand listening to this right now, if you're looking to partner with an agency to increase your performance in paid ads, understand what your goals are. It's going to be performance, right? So you kind of have to give into that a little bit. If you're looking for, you know, a very branded, beautiful experience, paid media is not going to be, you know, what works for you. And it really boils down to creating a strong creative range. And what that looks like is just having a mix of ads that have that are branded and unbranded, because there's a million different things working at any given time, just based on how fast the entire industry is moving. But if you can leverage trends, take advantage of what's working right now, being able to pivot easily and just kind of let go of the brand guidelines a little bit, the data is going to show you that the unbranded kind of mixed content approach is performing better for your account versus just going all the way to one end of the spectrum that is so heavily weighted on the branded piece.
And an ad is just the bait. Like if there's a metaphor, like I wore a lot of cringy outfits in my day. And if my character was judged on like the cutoff Ralph Lauren polo, like I used to wear in the 90s, it wouldn't be good. An ad is just a touch point in the funnel. An ad is not going to determine your experience with a product necessarily as a consumer, right? You've got the rest of the funnel, you've got the landing page, you've got the whole checkout process and all of that. So I think you're not letting go of that whole process, right? You're just letting go of the ad in a lot of cases.
Exactly. Yeah. I think brands fixate so much on that ad piece, and they tend to overlook the rest of the funnel. As you mentioned, it's just one touch point in the entire marketing funnel. It's not the end all be all of your brand. For a lot of consumers, the brand experience actually happens post-purchase, right? What's the experience like when they receive the product? What's customer service like, et cetera? Even the user experience prior to that. So site navigation, was it a easy checkout experience? Like how cool are you on organic? Like, do you have a really strong organic social presence? What are you doing there? What are you doing in the real world, right? Most people, and I could say probably a large percentage of them, don't remember how they converted on something. They don't remember the ad that got them to a landing page or a product display page. You're never going to remember it, right? So, and the other thing with ads too, is they can be killed really easily. Some do last, you know, a really long time, but you're going to experience creative fatigue as well. So it's not going to live online for the rest of your brand's existence. Realistically, it'll probably die out within a few weeks. So don't put too much merit in the like brand perception when it comes to ads.
Yeah, we're so insanely spoiled because, I mean, all I've ever known as a marketer is the DTC world, the e-com world. And I was just having a chat internally today. Like, I think there was 10,000 creative tasks that our team completed over the course of the last calendar year. And for me, I look at that and go, it's actually so amazing that we as an agency get to turn creative over so fast. And some people might look at that and look at it as a negative, like, oh, they failed a lot. Like, yeah, we did fail a lot, but it means that we also won a lot for our clients because we can move quickly. And like the fact that Meta creatives change so fast, I just think that it's really exciting for brands because, you know, Alex, you live in the email world, you have to look at all of your channels very differently from a creative perspective. And each channel has its own amount of like foundation that it builds for your brand. On Meta, there's a really like fast experience that you have. You get served an impression, you're probably gonna scroll past a video in 2-3 seconds. Whereas if I get sent an email, like you're gonna probably put a ton of time and effort as a brand into the email to create a really positive experience for me from a design and overall creative perspective. And that leaves a really deep interaction with me as a consumer. But every like channel is a little bit different and you have to look at things differently. But for us as an agency, it's a lot of fun because there's like a spectrum of resources that we get to dump into every channel. But we can move really fast in places like Meta. And then, you know, email is a really good opportunity to build a relationship with your customer. But we're so fortunate because it wasn't like that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Are you a Shopify brand owner looking to win, keep, and grow your customers? Everyone knows apps are fast becoming the best way to increase retention and boost sales. A sleek and engaging app normally means two things, time and money. But AppTile have changed the game. Their seamless no-code editor enables beautiful, personalized journeys for every customer. And with their free plan, nothing is stopping you from getting started. You'll pay as you grow, not as you go. So whether you're just starting out or a Shopify superstar, head over to apptile.com today and start designing your dream app.
It's got to be such a tough dynamic when you're in the loop where it's like, you know, there are things that you can do, but your hands are tied and like, oh, sorry, that's off limits. Like, I wanted to ask, like, Jocelyn, do you have any examples, you know, without naming names, of a client sort of situation where you found yourself facing down the death spiral and how you overcame it?
Yeah, it happens all the time. Like, it doesn't necessarily, it's not like a perfect client or an unperfect client. It's just a communication of a team dynamic. I would say one of the most common things, and I like to communicate this when I first onboard a client, like just expectations, feeling it out and seeing what they're comfortable with, because there is a range of what we call, you know, performance-based creatives. Like, there's the spectrum, and then there's like the lower spectrum, and we're trying to see, okay, where does that client fall to where there's room to play. And the easiest one I would say, and I think I mentioned this in the low-hanging fruit one, was color iterations. You know, oftentimes brands have these hierarchy of colors, and those top ones are like, these are the solid ones, but these are the secondary ones. The secondary ones tend to win. It's actually really funny because this happened this week. So we took the secondary colors and started just playing around with them because they were just, they popped more and like I responded better to them. So I played around with them with ads, and it was very clear that this one version of secondary color was thriving. Like, it overtook the entire account, these creatives that had that color in it. And we presented to them, and the client was like, oh, like, that's not really a brand color, is it? We go, no, but like, it's in there. Is that okay if we run it? They're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I checked their website yesterday, and it's now their header color. And we like went and creeped into, you know, their Shopify account and looking around, and you could see as soon as they changed that, performance went up. And so it's just that kind of dynamic of communicating the importance of these things. You know, they do make a difference, and just being open to playing around with it and being flexible and figuring that out, because it can be as simple as a color. And, you know, it might seem like such a big deal as a brand, but when it comes to your performance and making money and growing as a brand, that little color thing can go a really long way.
What was the color?
It was like a purple, a great purple. Pinks and purples are thriving on Meta. I've noticed this with all my clients. Like, I'm talking like pink products, even though nobody buys the pink products, they just like the color and it gets them stopping. So yeah, there's something there with those colors. So if you have them as a brand, play around with them.
I mean, there's definitely something there with like color psychology, right? Similar situation where a very branded account was just running a lot of, you know, their two hierarchy colors are black and white for the most part. We introduced red for some promos. And I mean, psychologically, we just associate sale with red, right? And I can say confidently for the past 6 months, our top performing ads that have just led the account have all had some form of red copy in them. And now, you know, you just continue to double down on it, right? Because that's the philosophy on Meta. Just continue to iterate on your winners, try to replicate the success. Then you kind of have to take bias out of the equation when it comes to minutia changes like that.
It comes to banner blindness, right? Like, even if you've seen a brand and you expect it always to be one color or whatever, that moment of difference can be enough to be like, oh, what is this? Oh, they're doing something different, you know?
The other thing that I feel like you guys have both done at different times that I think is genius is you, assuming that your spend levels are high enough and your sample size is big enough, you've like actually visually created a range of content you've produced for any given client and tried to isolate things like click cost, click through rate, conversion rate, and pull out trends based off of the creative spectrum that we're talking about. And often there's like, I would imagine there's like a aha moment, like, oh, we thought that our brand belonged here, but actually we want the performance that's over here. Like, there's a huge gap between those two things. Like, how do we close that gap? And then there's just like data-backed creative decision that has to happen there. So like having a visual and a number to stare at when you're navigating this, I would imagine, is hugely valuable.
Totally. I like to say it's like a Rubik's Cube. Like, there's 1,000 by 1,000 piece Rubik's Cube, and we're trying to find every, you know, situation that creates that perfectly one side, which is essentially performance, right? So it's just playing around with that and feeding the system so we can start pulling those high level trends and just scale.
Yeah, except it's plugged in. It's a Rubik's Cube, like plugged into the giant algorithm and plugged into the real world, changing all the time. Like, I just wonder with the pinks and purples, is that seasonal because of spring? Is that, those are the Easter colors? Like, is that?
I've seen them year round for years. Like, all of my years working in paid ads, some people like it.
It's a purple age, I think, these days. I think it's safe to say that we live in a purple age. Don't ask me to go deep on that. But cool. We got some color psychology here. Yeah. Anything else? Any other big creative trends that we're seeing that that are working well on Meta specifically?
I think a big thing we didn't dive into specifically when it comes to like performance-based creatives is, I know we touched upon it, like it's one touch point, not trying to cram your entire brand into one ad because it's just too much. It's overwhelming. You know, take one factor of your brand and that is your one piece of ad, whether that's a publication that you were in, just taking a screenshot of that one factor. And that a company of all those one factors creates your brand in the paid advertisement world, in the DTC space. And you want to have that range. You don't want to try to cram everything in one little ad because it overwhelms people and people don't know what to do with it. And usually they don't stop because they're a little bit intimidated by that much information.
An ad's job is to get you to the page. In so many cases, right? And I think a lot of people do want to have, like you say that, yeah, your whole brand experience in the ad, have that brand experience in the landing page, on your product page, in your product, but let the ad do its work.
My one thing that I'm like humbled with all the time is I'll build a beautiful ad, spend way too much time building it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So I get into this like mental habit where I'll build an ad and I'll often think like, almost like what's the opposite of what I just did and like try to look at my ad that I created from a counter perspective. And you can use ChatGPT to do it. It's challenging visually, but from a messaging perspective, you can help pick apart what you're trying to say and then create like variants that visually ride that spectrum that we're talking about. And so many times the other stuff performs better than the one that I invested all the time in. I see it all the time.
Let's be specific though. I think, yeah, it's happened to me since the early days of internet marketing.
Happens, but
let's
to me
be
a
specific
lot too.
About what are our tranches we're talking about here when it comes to on the scrappy to polished spectrum. I know we're talking studio content, you know, all in brand colors, really, you know, on the one end of things. What do our performance tranches look like?
So real quick, I like to replace scrappy with humanized.
Humanized.
Scrappy is just such a scary term. Again, it's one pinpoint of your brand. Humanized organic content. It's not out of your brand world. It's
that's
just one
good.
Piece of your brand.
We're all human.
Yeah. And as I said before, it's how do you add that humanized experience to a computer, right? How do you communicate that through a screen? And it's usually that organic style of content. And again, our range is those box shots, you know, just eat something in your house, something that looks like a human made it versus this highly produced professional. Don't get me wrong, there is room for those nice polished creatives in the account. We do have them. It's just a range. So sometimes we have those nice branded creatives that, oh, you look at them and like as a creative person, you love them. But usually what makes you the most amount of money is that humanized organic style. And I have a great example for what just Cam talked about was I created this batch of creatives and it's our classic like quad shot. You just put like UGC image in one quad, an offer in another, a product shot, and then like a moving product shot. It's, you know, a super ad. And there was one where I kid you not, every single quad was the same bag. And I was like, this is so ugly and repetitive. And I hated it. And I contemplated on deleting it from that batch. It's our top performer and has made us millions of dollars. And it's so funny because the client, we joke about it. We're like, this is ridiculous. Like Meta loves this. People love this. And yet none of us personally as like a creative person likes it, but it works, right? And so it's just funny little things like that, that are almost like against, maybe not necessarily common sense, because if you go to the very foundational of marketing, like four R's or whatever, like repetition and stuff like that, that's a part of it. So it's kind of not fighting your instincts and just letting the data do the speaking. You know, just see what happens. Just test it. See what happens and you'll be surprised.
Taking your ego out of it. Take your ego out of it. Ego is the enemy in this case. Let the data tell the story.
Totally.
The last piece there before we hop off, I think it just boils down to our inherent like nature, like scrolling behavior on social media, right? People don't like being advertised to, and it's about blending in through like blending in, but also standing out during that scrolling experience. As Jocelyn mentioned, like humanizing the brand. I like to say it's depicting the product in real life scenarios, right? You can make any product look absolutely incredible in a studio setting or in a, you know, hero video that you've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars making. But how does that product look in a real life setting? And that's what people are going to relate to. And if you're a brand and you're listening to this, I mean, you don't need to go and spend, you know, a large budget to create ads. And I think it's like, we can confidently back this because we've seen it across so many accounts, like the less money you spend kind of on ads, the more performance you can kind of unlock on, out of them for the majority of brands. And we see it all the time. The one trend that I have been seeing that I did want to touch on is for a very branded client, one of my most branded clients, we started doing TikTok ads in native fonts. So using platform native fonts and taking out their branded fonts. And we've just seen an incredible response to that on the performance side. But taking those ads and putting them on Meta has been absolutely phenomenal for us. So you have this very humanized experience that is so unbranded. It uses a TikTok font and we're using TikTok trending audio and we have it running on Meta. And it just has unlocked like phenomenal performance for them. And so again, the data does the speaking. Right, it leads the way. It leads our decisions, creative decisions. And so, since then, since we've kind of pushed that boundary on the creative range, the client has eased up a little bit, and they're more receptive to these type of ideas. Right, and it's because they can see it in their Shopify store. Plain and simple, it's translating there.
What's the positive to the death loop? Is it's like the chakra transcendence? Like what's the opposite? Yeah, what's the opposite? Because it's like when you do get the flywheel spinning and you do have creative freedom to let the data, what's the upward cycle
that just we say want? Like a creative flow. It's the like creative flow, you know, state. I get so excited when I get off a client call and I've pitched them a whole bunch of ideas and they're just like, yep, let's do it. Let's test it. Let's just see. I'm like, yeah. And I get really excited. And then we can quickly pump those out. We can quickly test them. And then usually those will make them a lot of money. And then it just becomes this positive cycle of like, okay, they get it and they're open to it. And also our team is, we're protecting the brand to a certain extent. You know, we're not just like throwing it out the door. It's still in their brand umbrella, but it's just broken down into smaller pieces. And once the brand gets it and we get that communication down, it's a flow state.
And it's just different looks in the infinite feed. Alex was saying like it is just one part of the funnel. You do quite often run images and ads that cover the spectrum of humanized to polished. And so you're going to get multiple looks on your brand. And that's really what it takes to move the needle on Meta these days. So this was very interesting. Thanks for coming by again, Alex and Jocelyn.
Anytime.
Cam too.
Happy to join.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're not getting the D2C newsletter, you can subscribe for free at directtoconsumer.co. And if you want to learn more about Pilot House's all-killer, no-filler services, take off to pilothouse.co.
I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.